Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for October 5th, 2020. This is your birthday week.
Yeah, I'm going to turn 49, which makes you very old. Very, very old.
Well, I don't think it's that old.
If I get to 100, I'm not yet middle-aged, but barring that, over the hill. I'm literally over the hill.
Well, I thought you were going to get a head transplant, so...
That's what I want. I want a head transplant. Does our listener remember the head transplant?
I'm
not sure what happened with that. That was supposed to happen like in 2019.
Yeah, well...
This surgeon claims that he's figured out how to do a head transplant. Body gets really old, all you have to do is wait for a really young person to die, and then take that young person's body and stick your head on it, and you have a new lease on life. That's what I want to do.
I thought that they did it and the person died pretty quickly.
Huh?
I thought that they did it and the person immediately died.
Really? I didn't know that.
I'm not sure.
I don't think that's true. I gotta find out. Because that's the future. You're looking at the new hope.
No.
Jesus can give everlasting life, or you can have a head transplant.
Well, in line of that, because this last weekend was the Evolving Faith Conference. So this tweet is perfect. Somebody quoted Jen Hatmaker.
Why would you even want to go to an Evolving Faith Conference?
Jen Hatmaker said, "Hear me saying this. Some things actually do die dead, rigor mortis. In that case, it would be your body that you wouldn't take the head off of and sew it on somebody else. But Jesus reminds us that even there, somehow, life can be found."
What? What's she talking about?
Some things actually do die dead, rigor mortis. But Jesus reminds us that even there, somehow, life can be found. You know what's really sad? How life is found is actually... specified clearly
in Jesus
in the gospel on account of how he rose from the dead.
You can't dig around in a cadaver
looking for some life.
Right. It's in Jesus.
No, but he rose from the dead. So
there's an actual mechanism by which this happens.
The somehow is clarified by the rest of the gospel.
Why would you want to go to an Evolving Faith Conference? What?
Why are you asking me? I don't want to go.
I don't understand the appeal. Because, the apostles said things like, this is the once for all, deposit.
I actually...
but then we want to evolve it. If it evolved, it's not that once for all deposit anymore.
That's true.
I mean, if Jesus is the truth and he revealed the truth to his apostles, if that evolves... or changes, then it's no longer the truth that Jesus gave to his apostles. So, just naming the conference that is like
you're
telegraphing the fact that, we're no longer Christians. We're evolving to something else. Maybe you're now going to be an ape. Who knows what you're going to...
Devolving conference?
Yeah, devolving conference, right.
Well, I'm going to do another... big plug. I think that at least the children's book comes out today, or maybe it's tomorrow, but I'm in the chapter where she is talking about how it's really good, actually. How do you get it's a more kindly explanation of progressivism than you've just given. She's more sympathetic in the kindly than I'm too tired.
Yeah, I think it is.
But it's a really good book. I'm going to say it again.
Yeah.
It's an excellent book. You should read Elisa Childers' Another Gospel. And it is so good. She just very, very, very kindly disarms and undoes the tropes and the thought patterns of progressive Christianity.
I think we should probably need a class through it sometime when we do our Christian ed.
It's so good.
I'm not talking about Alicia Childers here, but it is interesting how people who really haven't been torn to shreds by progressivism kind of flirt with it a little bit. We were talking about a female Anglican ordained person, Hannah King, who wrote that article about
why can't we all get along now?
We should all. We have lots of Episcopalian friends and they're really great people and we disagree about something, but we should do ministry together, as if they're not teaching something that will lead people to hell.
The stance towards the, right, they're teaching something that will lead people to hell, but also their stance towards the Bible and everything.
The reason they're leading people to hell is because they have a,
well, the word torn to shreds is really good. Like, you won't come out of that. That's not neutral at all. Don't even worry about hell. Your experience now will be utterly destroyed of who God is. I mean, you should be worried about hell, but also any semblance of coherence in your mind and heart, it's going to be, and if you don't agree with them too, they will destroy you.
They're fascists.
So don't think that you can just sort of dabble or like, I don't know.
I mean, as I was saying at the conference this weekend, I spoke at this conference and I was talking about our experience in the Love is Love Episcopal Church.
Yeah.
I know Episcopalians. I know quote-unquote progressive.
Not every single individual Episcopalian, but the ones who really, really believe in this this kind of ideology.
Yeah. I mean, these are my people. I was telling the conference, I sing the song of my people. I know what it is. I know how they think. And it's not, they're not cuddly teddy bears. Mm-mm. They will take everything you have and destroy you.
Yeah. Because you don't believe in love.
In the name of justice.
In the name of love.
Well, just like, I was saying at this conference how increasingly evangelical leaders are sounding like Episcopalian bishops.
Yeah.
And that's what you have. I was reading some articles this morning about evangelicals, providing cover for other evangelicals to vote for an abortionist, for Biden. As if it's, there's a panoply of ideas out there, and I think the argument is something like the leftist socialist causes that Biden supports somehow outweighs his, that it somehow becomes makes him more pro-life than Trump, even though he also wants to continue the slaughter of babies. I mean, it's just an incoherent argument. Even if somehow it was true that the policies that Biden puts in place would result in fewer babies being aborted. Just try that argument on with any other moral atrocity.
I like the lynching one that you were doing on Twitter.
Let's say Biden was pro lynching. Like he thinks that it should be legal for gangs of white people to lynch black people whenever
safe, legal, and rare.
Yeah, safe, legal, and rare. Right. So, but, the panoply of his, the whole of his policies would actually probably reduce lynching because white people would be less poor and less angry and whatever it might be, who knows. And so less black people would actually be lynched, but, he's pro-lynching. So would any of the evangelicals right now writing that it's okay to vote for Biden do that? No, they wouldn't.
Again.
And what that reveals is they don't understand the horror of abortion. They don't get it. They don't think it's that big of a deal, because if you can see a lynched person on one hand and think it's an atrocity, which it is, and see an aborted baby on the other hand and think a woman's choice, we just need to make sure she's not living in poverty, you are morally a midget. You have morally lost your grounds. You've just capitulated to the spirit of the age, and you need to repent and go to Jesus. Sorry.
Well, good morning. It's another Monday morning. I was going to say, you don't have to vote for Trump. Nope. There are like a lot of little parties popping up.
He's fine.
Like, but vote for someone else. Write somebody's name in. If the entire country refused to vote for the two people on offer, then they would have to come up with someone else. But unhappily for early voting, a lot of people have already voted, but you don't have to vote for either of these two people. I feel like I just need to say that again. We actually had something we were supposed to talk about today. Did you?
Yeah, we have. Our listener sent a note to us.
Okay, good question. Are you going to read it? You should go find it and read it.
Yeah.
It's about your favorite topic that you were just.
The letter is written by someone. I guess this person's a progressive, it sounds like, not really a Methodist minister. So
the person, our listener, is upset because she's going to quote somebody at length who is saying things that are very unhelpful.
Right. So okay. The person she's quoting is a Methodist minister, not the person who wrote the letter.
Right. I think the person who wrote it is an Anglican, as she should be, but I'm not sure about that.
Right. She hasn't told us that we can give her name, so we won't. But yeah. I'll read the letter. Greetings from your faithful listener. She knows she's the only one.
Yeah. This is really epically awesome.
And we are days away and cannot wait for your book to arrive at the Hearts and Minds bookstore. That's nice.
Yeah, and just say that like.
I can't wait for it too.
You can. Good. Yeah. Okay. Wait. So let's pause and tell people to buy my book. Yeah. It is days away. It is at the printer. You can get it. You should order it. If you can't order it, I'm really sorry. I can't order it for you. I should do something.
It's not just Hearts and Minds. You can order it on Amazon too. And is there a Kindle version?
There's going to be Kindle version. If you order it and you want it signed, I'll have to figure something out. Maybe I should buy a bunch and offer to sell them signed.
Yeah.
With a special message just for you, our listener.
God's given you a special message just for those who want a signed book that doesn't apply to others.
Yeah.
And you get a special blessing for the...
Ooh, I should offer special blessings.
So anyway, I have a question for both of you regarding the abortion issue. I stand in full agreement with you both and most of Christendom on God's grief and condemnation over our children, nation's killing of the unborn. But I've been grieved and troubled by a position posed by one of my best friends from college, who's now a Methodist minister. I won't give the location where she is to protect the guilty, where the minister is. I got so angry I had to mute her on all my social media channels.
It's happening to me every single day. I'm just wildly muting, like, almost all of my...
But as I researched, I see there are others with her view, and I'd love to hear you refute it biblically. I feel like such false teaching is leading many astray. Here was her post that did me in. So let me go ahead and read it. This is from the Methodist minister, not our listener. I am convinced that once again the conversation is being diverted from systemic racism to the political issue of abortion. Oh, wait, you see, there's a little subtle thing. Being diverted from systemic racism to the political issue.
As if systemic racism isn't political. And also as if abortion isn't like a really sickeningly racist thing.
Yeah.
It's a really racist because
per capita most minority babies slaughtered
that don't make it out.
By a greater percentage than white babies, right?
So if you really, really cared about racism, you would go and look up where Planned Parenthood...
Because the ghouls at Planned Parenthood plant their little churches.
That's what it was. Hmm. We should just... This is not changing the subject. You know, some very famous person who I don't know who it is at all, don't know why she's famous, miscarried a baby last week. And Planned Parenthood... tweeted condolences and something about how you can expect to have grief after losing a baby. Did you see those tweets?
I retweeted that with the title ghouls on it, because that's what they are. They're bloodthirsty
that's
maniacal killers.
That's like Hitler being like, I don't know, actually.
But they plant their little Planned Parenthood churches in minority neighborhoods because they want to kill more minority babies.
Yeah. They don't
in the name of helping the poor, quote unquote.
Right. So let's get over the idea that if you're worried about systemic racism, then you're also worried about abortion because the two are inextricably linked. Okay, go on.
So to the political issue of abortion, parentheses, and reproductive rights.
Yeah, no.
No, abortion is not a reproductive right. You're murdering somebody. It's not a right. You don't get the right to murder somebody. Well, they're living in my body and they're dependent on me. Yeah, well, so is a toddler. They're not living in your body, maybe they're totally dependent on you and they're living in your house. So if you can murder a toddler, which I, you know, actually
a lot of more people are thinking that you can.
That's happening. I mean, you can now murder a baby after it's born if you don't want it. If you try to abort it and it comes out, you could just, you know, kill it because you didn't want it.
So love is love.
Love is love, right? So I use quote political intentionally because it is a modern debate.
What is a modern debate?
Well, she thinks it hasn't been a debate for a long time.
Oh, okay.
And it is politically motivated by racism.
Wait, what is abortion?
Abortion, yeah. So apparently...
So we all agree then?
Well, no. I think from her perspective, she's saying...
We want to talk about
abortion. We want black people to be poor, and so we want them to have their babies.
So it's racist of us to think that... Okay, how patronizing is that, too? You know, we want. I mean, who are you to anyway? I'm speechless. Go on.
Just think about it. Like, just you are anti-Semitic because you don't want the Holocaust to go on because it's better for the Semites to be dead.
Because
they have miserable lives anyway. So you know, we're putting them in misery. So to stop the Holocaust is to be anti-Semitic. We're helping the Jews by putting an end to their
miserable lives,
right?
That's rich.
Yeah. Full disclosure, we are an adoptive family. Oh, well, okay. Well, then that changes everything. Our youngest child is on the way, is ours by way of a courageous human who fully nurtured his gestation.
Okay. There's a way that used to be said. Wait, what is that called? Fully nurtured his gestation. Is that called like being pregnant?
Yeah,
fully nurtured. So you brought the baby to term.
See, gestation makes it sound more like this is some alien being living in you, right? This is like
fully nurtured is gestation,
right?
I should have said that.
So it was her choice to nurture the gestation rather than ending the gestation.
Which, I mean, the word nurture is kind of loaded. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you should use that word if you.
And look, the next line is pretty interesting. And endured the trauma of giving him birth.
Well, that's true. No one's going to lie. No one's going to disagree with that.
Right.
It's traumatic to give birth. Like, if you want to be traumatized, try giving birth.
Right. But the weight of this line, all read together, our youngest child is ours by way of a courageous human who faithfully nurtured his gestation and endured the trauma of birth is to lift the weight from those who don't want to endure that trauma.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. It's also like, it's so stupid speak. What's it called? When you use a lot of jargon, gestation and fully nurtured, like the phrasing is so, Brave New World, yeah. Or go on.
Okay, so
I like that stupid speak. I'm gonna coin that from now on when I can't think of the word I was actually looking for.
All to entrust this new human into our care, we are changed by him. We are more because of him. Well, that, you know, that's what matters, really. Is that you are more and that you are changed. That's really the only importance that we should attach to babies.
We are more.
Is that, you know, we are made more by the baby. And as long as the baby makes us more, then that's good. But, you know,
right,
if it doesn't make us more, then
women are actually, that's the lie, is that women are going to be made less by having the baby. So the moral, the baby is really duty bound to prove
that it's worthy of living.
Mama will be made more,
right,
when she...
Because if mama's made less,
is traumatized
just
by
stick a needle into its brain and tear apart, or you suck it out, right? Because it's not worth living at that point if it doesn't make mama more. So at the same time, the Bible is silent on the subject of abortion. Exodus 21, 22 through 24 clearly doesn't view the killing of a fetus as a capital offense. Okay.
So let's just look at that.
First of all.
Exodus.
Yeah, let's look at that little text. Before we even get there, the biblical case for against abortion is not based on Exodus 21, 22 through 24, which I know what text she's talking about. Two men get in a fight.
I know, I thought you were going to look at it.
We'll look at it in a minute. But that's not the... I don't know why this person goes to that text, but that text actually conflicts with her point. But the main case for not murdering babies in their mother's womb is the incarnation of Christ himself and the knowledge that every life, that God is the author of life. Scripture teaches very clearly that no woman conceives apart from the will of God. That's God's work in conceiving a baby in a woman's womb. So who are you? Who are you to destroy what God has made?
Well, see, everybody's like, "Oh, I am who I am."
Right. So
and I am kindness who am everything.
Right. So the second thing is that because we're fallen, and our fallenness is something that begins at conception. I was a sinner in my mother's womb, is what David says. The incarnation, God's redemption of humanity had to begin at conception. That's why when in Luke chapter 1 and 2, when the Holy Spirit overshadows Mary and she begins to be pregnant,
she begins to nurture gestation.
The Lord. The Lord is present within her at the moment of conception.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so when she goes to visit her cousin Elizabeth, and Elizabeth feels her baby, John, who's only 6 months past conception, still in her womb, leap.
Just, you don't want to use words like womb.
Yeah, okay, well, in her baby carrying unit or whatever. It is. Leap and say, and then Luke specifically says, Elizabeth filled with the Holy Spirit. So the words coming out of her mouth in Luke chapter 1 are from God. These are not her words, these are from God. That when the baby leapt in her womb, it was out of joy because the mother of her Lord was present. The mother of her Lord. All right, so we're not talking about someone who's not there yet. the Lord was present within Mary. And little non-human John, who is just, you know, he's just a fetus. He's just whatever. He's just, you know, just a bundle of cells, leapt for joy. In his womb. So now you, if you're pro-abortionist, you need to explain why it would not be okay for Mary to find some potion or take some kind of medicine to murder her child in her womb, because that's what it would be. That's when would be the reason that God took on flesh at the incarnation is because that's when humanity, that's the origin, that's the point on which the human person begins to be. And so he took on flesh from that point, because what's not assumed, it goes back to the fathers of the church. What's not, I think it's Basil said, no, it's not Basil. It's one of the fathers that last name begins with an N.
Mazianus
or whatever. I have to look it up. But what is not,
you can remember the first letter of the father's name.
One of the Gregories or something. I don't know. Gregory. Okay. I think it was. It said, what's not assumed or taken up, right, is not redeemed. So whatever is not assumed is not redeemed. So those who say, the adoptionist who says that God became flesh at, you know, Jesus' baptism or something, that
there's no redemption for people before they're baptized.
Yeah, there's no redemption for teenagers or for young children or for babies, because that aspect of humanity has not been taken up.
Right.
So the ground and basis for our recognition that life begins at conception, and to do harm to that life is murder, is the incarnation of Christ in Mary's womb.
Right.
And again, the knowledge that God, that God is a giver of life, so no life comes. There is no human life apart from God's design. And so to destroy it in the womb is to destroy God's image and to subject yourself to the penalties of that, which, you know, in the Old Testament would be
stoning.
Right. All right. So let's look at Exodus 21. Get it up here. And there is, I'm not gonna pretend there's not controversy over this. There is controversy over this.
Over Exodus?
Over this passage in Exodus 21. But I wanted to make sure that people knew that that's Exodus 21 is not the text that we would ground our argument in. Okay, so in Exodus 21, verses 22 through 24, we read, "When men strive together and hit a pregnant woman so that her children come out, but there is no harm, the one who hit her shall surely be fined, as the woman's husband shall impose on him, and he shall pay as the judge is determined. But if there is harm, then you shall pay life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, strike for strike." So the argument from the pro baby murder side is, you know, if the woman is not harmed, or if the woman is harmed but not hurt, not killed, then you pay her. So when men strive together and hit a pregnant woman so that her children come out, but there is no harm to her, they would say.
That's the pro-baby murder side says that.
The one who hit her shall be fined, as the woman's husband shall impose, and he shall pay, the judges determine. But if there is harm to her, then you pay life for life, eye for eye, or tooth for tooth. But it could just as easily be read, when two men strive together and hit a pregnant woman so that her children come out, but there is no harm to the children. In other words, she has a premature birth because of the fight, but the children are fine.
And she's
or,
fine.
Or she, or the, yeah. Or,
can't it be
or
both?
Or the children are not healthy, but they're, yeah.
They're
both.
Alive.
They're alive.
And both. She's, I, right. Like, just when you just read it straight out, it sounds like, and there's no harm. It doesn't say, one, a normal person assumes both mother and child.
Right.
There's no harm.
Right. And given the value with which
children.
I mean, if you were barren in the old covenant, Old Testament, it was a terror. It was a horrible thing. It was a curse, right? So it was life was
no one reading it at the time would think,
oh, just the baby died.
Oh, just the baby died, because that's no big deal. Nobody
like
needs
21st. That's like,
nobody
that's,
needs that baby.
That's a first world way of reading.
Mm-hmm.
A white first world way of reading this text.
Yeah.
Way. Speaking of racism.
Yeah, speaking of racism. You're reading your white fragility over the text.
Right, right. So you could just need to be read, shall impose on him and he shall pay as the judge is determined. But if there is harm, then you should pay life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. In other words, if the baby's loss is life is lost, or the woman's life is lost, or both, whatever. Then there's life for life. There's a legitimate argument over what's being said here, but there's no way to read this as a defense of abortion. You can't.
In fact, there's a good like capital punishment thing here.
Right.
Maybe.
Right. Yeah.
If you want.
Well, I mean, that goes to another like trope that the other.
Sorry. If you're pro-life,
you support the death penalty, then you're not really pro-life. Well, you know, God instituted the death penalty.
Well, don't go to Exodus, whatever, if you're trying to make that case.
Yeah. God. So, and he also said, don't murder, right? So you can be pro-life because you don't like murder, because God says murder is wrong, and also support the death penalty because God, who said murder is wrong, also instituted the death penalty.
Because it's not murder.
So the contradiction is you, not, you're on the other side of justice, not God. On this.
This text is sort of pro-woman in the old, you know, at the time, like for the people who would have been jangling around with this text, the woman being hurt or harmed and her child in a brawl with men wouldn't have any recourse to anything.
Right.
But in this case, the justice question is on behalf of her.
Right.
Like, if anything happens to her, then
yeah,
the people have to pay.
Yeah.
And that would have been sort of unusual at the time, I think.
Right.
So
Exodus 21, 22 through 24 clearly doesn't view the killing of a fetus as a capital offense, says this woman. She's trusting that her readers are not going to look up Exodus 21, 22 through 24, because if you look it up, it's not clear at all. It's the furthest thing from clear. Of course, all life is sacred. Of course.
Well, then why can you kill some of it? Yeah. Like, don't say of course, because you're literally saying that some of it's not sacred.
Still, the perspective on what that means has shifted significantly in my lifetime, which is the standard for everything, is, you know, your lifetime. Because she's now about to go into a section where she quotes from evangelical history in the 60s, as if that's determinative for this question. So in 1968, a DTS prof, Bruce Waltke, wrote an article for Christianity Today. It was then a common stance for evangelical Christians that life begins at birth. After all, God breathed the breath of life into the first human.
Was it really, though?
There was a period where, you know, is okay. So this is not necessarily wrong, because evangelicals during the 60s, 50s didn't have a big deal with abortion. And the reason they didn't have a big deal with abortion is because it was one of those issues where they differentiated themselves from the Roman Catholic Church.
Right.
Like with the birth control, it was a bundle. I mean, the Roman Catholic Church was teaching no birth control, no abortion. And I think they were right about the abortion thing and about most forms of birth control. But so evangelicals just didn't think about it. They divided themselves from Rome on that question. And it was horrible. Because you can cite the fact that evangelicals in the past took a pro-murder position, does not mean that's a good thing. What do you know? I mean, church history is full of Christians making stupid
lynching, for instance, being a case in point.
I mean, you don't want to you don't want to cite this as, and in fact, if you want to play the church tradition game, which we're going to do in a minute, we can go back and show you just how out of step this position is with the history of the church, which I'll do in a minute. It was then a common stance for evangelical Christians that life begins at birth. After all, God breathed the breath of life into the first human, breath essential proof of life. Around the same time, private Christian schools were still preventing black students from enrolling. So in 1969, several families in Mississippi filed suit. In 1971, the Supreme Court ruled that tax exemption for private schools would be denied to those that denied entry to people based on color, including notably racist Bob Jones University. Bob Sr. preached that discrimination is biblical. That's true. He did.
We looked at his sermons in our class, and it was awful.
He was a racist. Right. The Heritage Foundation's Paul Weyrich rushed to defend BJU by calling meeting to discuss what issue could grab the attention of conservative Christians. Someone suggested abortion. And just like that, abortion became a political movement, taking the nation's attention firmly off racism and the education system. I think that is a twisting of history. I do think that evangelicals rethought the issue in the early 70s, especially as the Roe v. Wade court case neared, and they were thinking through.
It gained steam slowly. It took a while. Yeah. And I don't think that evangelicals, are some evangelicals racist? And were they in the 70s? Yeah. Yep. But does that
somehow mean that it's okay to
murder babies?
So therefore,
ergo,
let's murder babies.
Also, I would say that the question of abortion brought racism more to the mind of evangelicals when it became, as it's become clear, that Planned Parenthood has targeted and gone after black communities on purpose. I mean, when I found out that horrified me. I mean, I think it's brought race more to the consciousness of evangelicals who care about this issue than anything else, actually. And not just because we just want lots of black babies, poor babies around so that they can live in misery. But actually, because I think that there's a correlation between the cultural poverty, the economic poverty, the moral poverty, all swirling around. You can't just take out tons and tons of the people in a community who should be there and think that that community is going to thrive. And I think people really care about that. They want communities to flourish, if you want to use that word.
Right.
So it's slanderous, I think, to say that pro-life people don't care, you know, about the whole system, the whole family system or community system that and how that's joined together with the rest of America. Like, America is fractured and ruined and decimated because so many children that should be in our pews and in our schools and walking around our streets have just disappeared as if we're China. So, that's taken a toll. And a lot of us, a lot of people, this sort of undirected rage that you see on the faces of people who are in mobs.
Right.
I think you can take that all the way back to 1970, whatever, when it, you know, it's not one for one, but it you can't do one thing and then think it's going to have no consequence or no problem anywhere else.
Right. I mean, so let's take a little stroll back through memory lane to his memory. Well, her memory goes back to 1968, but you know, the church's memory goes back to the apostles.
Well, some of the church's memory.
Right. Well, shit. And so the we've already cited Luke as probably the best place to go to talk about whether or not infants are infants, or whether they're children, or they're living human beings in the womb, and I think we've shown that that's the case. But what about church tradition? What are the fathers of the church? What do they say?
No, that's a stupid question. What about the mothers? Where are the church mothers? Gestating creatures or human, gestating humans.
Right.
Well, where are they? I'm just kidding. Please don't tell me that right now.
But the assumption is, I think that they probably agreed with the fathers back then because there wasn't a feminist movement really in church history. So,
which pope was it whose sister was like, you have to preach to him while she was like lecturing him all the time, and he eventually gave up and became a monk?
I don't know. I
can't remember which one.
So the didache, didache is the Greek word teaching, was a document that was, we don't know who wrote it, but it's dated most likely in the first century. The earliest dating is 70 AD. So it's an extra-biblical, the first account we have of Christians wrestling with the issue of abortion. And you know what? It's not really a wrestling match. There's not a lot of struggle in what the Didache says about it. It's pretty straightforward. And chapter 2, and they put verse numbers on it. Verse 2, you read, "You shall not abort a child or commit infanticide."
Oh, well, shoot then.
No, that's not, the Didache was written in Greek, and so you might say, well, that's just some conservative jerk translating it. Well, okay. Let's take Bart Ehrman's translation of that text. This is Bart Ehrman, who is not a Christian, doesn't believe anything that the Bible teaches is true about Jesus. He translates the same clauses as, "Do not abort a fetus or kill a child that is born." Right? And a fetus is just Latin for unborn baby. So, you've got a problem. In the Greek there is technon, which is child. So I'm not sure why Bart Ehrman uses
fetus,
because it's not a fetus. It's actually a child. Technon is child. So very early on, you have the Christian church being very clear that to kill a born baby or an unborn baby is
wicked,
right? So let's see. You know, let's continue this stroll through history, and we can see that in the third century, Tertullian, writing in the 200s, says this. Let me find it. Let me get it up on my screen here again. Okay, so how are they dead unless they were first alive? But still in the womb, an infant by necessary cruelty is killed when lying twisted at the womb's mouth. He prevents birth and is a matricide unless he dies. Therefore, there is among us, among the arms of physicians, an instrument by which with a rotary movement, the genital parts are first opened. Then with a cervical instrument, the interior members are slaughtered with careful judgment by a blunt barb, so that the whole criminal deed is extracted with a violent delivery. There's also a bronze needle by which the throat.
Oh my gosh, don't read anymore.
Yeah. But I'm trying to find a place where.
I mean, you get the sense that he's not on board with it.
The most unhappy infancy of one of this kind, who had first to be killed, lest a live woman be rent apart. Of this necessity of crime. I'm trying to find them.
What are you looking for?
I'm trying to write them. He's clearly negative about it. I'm trying to find the one that.
Is he talking about?
Here it is. Okay. In our case, murder being once for all forbidden, we may not destroy even the fetus in the womb, while as yet the human being derives its blood from other parts of the body for its sustenance. To hinder a birth is merely a speedier man killing. Nor does it matter whether you take away life that is born or destroy one that is coming to the birth. That is a man which is going to be one. You have the fruit already in the seed. So that's pretty clear. And I think we can, I'll just do one more. Chrysostom, a little bit later.
Okay.
Wherever the fathers touch on this, here it is. Okay. Why sow where the ground makes it its care to destroy the fruit? Where there are many efforts at abortion, where there is murder before the birth, for even the harlot thou dost not let continue a mere harlot, but makest her a murderer also. You see how drunkenness leads to whoredom, whoredom to adultery, adultery to murder, or rather something even worse than murder, for I have no name to give it, since it does not take off the thing born, but prevents it from being born. Why then dost thou abuse the gift of God, and fight with his laws, and follow after what is a curse as if it were a blessing, and make the chamber of procreation a chamber for murder, and arm the woman that was given for childbearing unto slaughter? For with a view to drawing more money by being agreeable and an object of longing to her lovers, even this she is not backward to do, so heaping upon thy head a great pile of fire. For even if the daring deed be hers, yet the causing of it is thine. Hence too come idolatries, since many, with a view to become acceptable, devise incantations and libations and love potions and countless other plans, yet still after such great unseemliness, after slaughters, after idolatries, the thing, fornication, seems to belong to things indifferent, aye, and to many that have wives too. He's being sarcastic in that last line, but you see what he's saying. That's a great text, because he's not just saying women shouldn't murder babies. He's blaming the men. Right.
And society and the
right. So you cause the woman to be a quote unquote horror, and then you make and her murder murder her baby. Turning the chamber of birth into a chamber for murder.
It's really horrible.
Yeah.
Wow.
But those are just two examples. Three examples, I guess. But you can go back and there's unanimous. The fathers are unanimous on this.
Okay, so
the church has never supported abortion.
Right.
And so going back to 1968 and evangelicals talking in some star chamber, that's who cares? I mean, it doesn't make a difference. First, because the Bible teaches this, and also because tradition teaches this.
And if evangelicals were wrong at some point, that's fine. Like, yeah, it's not fine, but
that doesn't
make it okay, because right. You know what they thought it was. They thought they didn't have a big problem with it in 1960, so it makes it fine for me now in 2020 to right. just go on with a horrible thing that now is just, I mean, use the question of slavery. It took a long time for people to really change their feelings about it. And then there was a huge war fought because people began to be really repulsed, enough right. people, that it was worth
right.
a fight. Do you think that that wasn't, should everybody have just stayed in their feelings of not caring? Because that's right. a stupid, stupid argument.
Right. Now, some people will argue that Thomas Aquinas, because he didn't define life as beginning at the conception, he believed that ensoulment took place later. They'll cite him in support of abortion. But no, he was very clear that he did not support abortion, even though he believed that ensoulment was something that took place later, because it's the human in seed form. So he was against abortion just as much as the people before him were. So it's no argument. I mean, you can't find a father who said, okay, well, it's not yet.
It's fine to kill it.
And sold, so go ahead and murder it.
Yeah.
So anyway, you want to go back to this letter and see how she finishes off?
Yeah.
And just like that, abortion became a political movement, taking the nation's attention firmly off of racism and the education system. My concern is, now that national awareness of racism in policing has endured the first birth pangs.
That's funny.
Right. So now the national awareness of racism is like a baby.
Right. But not a baby.
The real crime is murdering that baby. Not real babies.
The metaphorical baby.
Don't murder the metaphorical baby. Go ahead and murder the actual baby, but don't murder the metaphorical baby.
If you can pry my metaphor out of my grasp with your cold dead fingers.
I mean, I if she weren't Methodist, I would say she's Episcopalian. This is peak Episcopalianism, right?
Yeah.
As endeared the first birth thing, we will become distracted by peripheral issues. I mean, because, you know, I can see it in my head, like an Episcopalian female professor at BTS or somewhere saying, my concern is now that national awareness of racism and policing has endured its first birth pangs.
I want you to celebrate the Eucharist out of your womb.
Yeah, all the...
but not deliver a baby out of your womb.
This is the guy God forbid. That would get the ooh.
Yeah, ooh. Birth pangs.
Yeah, from the seminary students listening. We will now become distracted by peripheral issues instead of coaching the nation through necessary changes, halt progress and deliver stillbirths.
Yeah, that's really sickening to deny the actual language of birth to the woman that's giving birth, but then take it and use it for your political agenda.
Yeah.
That's just, I mean, first of all, it's annoying. It's bad. It's a bad literary device. Second of all, it's just the first one. It's wicked to use that emotional language of stillbirth and not apply it to the woman who gave birth to the child that she ended up adopting. Talk about dehumanizing.
Yeah. I love my babies. Well, that's what matters, right? Because, you know, she didn't love them.
To death with them.
Right. So it really matters. It's the only thing that matters. May we love our neighbors and create a more perfect union where all are free to fully grow as image of God.
Mm. as image of God without the article, except except those babies that we don't want right now. Right. They shouldn't. They will not live because we don't want them. So, is that the end?
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand. So the babies are not the image of God. Mm-hmm. They don't have the image of God, I guess. I mean,
not yet.
Until they're born, I guess. I don't know, I'm not sure what her argument is, but how can we have love our neighbors and create a more perfect union where all are free to fully grow into the image of God when she wants to murder people made in the image of God?
Some of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
In the name of anti-racism, too.
Yeah.
Like, I, you know, color me crazy, but I think that you can be against racism and against abortion at the same time. Like, you don't, being against abortion doesn't turn you into a racist.
Yeah.
And somebody who's distracted about, you know, it's possible to think through the issues of the day calmly and rationally, racism, abortion, COVID, without losing your head and running around screaming.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess maybe it's not possible. None of us are doing it. So,
I mean, I also think there's a little bit of elitism going on. I mean, you know, on the part of evangelicals who are desperately writing these articles about how it's totally okay morally to vote for Biden. I think they just have a visceral dislike for Trump.
Well, which, yeah. I mean, that's the whole point.
Yeah,
he's a boob. He's
right.
He's a populist. And he's embarrassing. And who among us is not completely humiliated that he's president? That's the main thing.
Which I understand. I understand, but I think that
I don't think you should run out and support murder as your reaction to that, to having an embarrassing president.
I mean, all of the arguments that are actually being made about voting for Biden could be made for voting for Adolf Hitler. I know. I think the Godwin's law is actually.
He's not literally Hitler.
He's
too
worse.
Old.
No, he's worse. Supporters of abortion are actually worse than Hitler. You're insulting and bearing false witness against Nazis when you say that you can't compare the abortionists to Nazis, because the abortionists have killed 65 million babies. Now, you know, Nazis only killed 6 million. So they're less bloody than the abortionists.
I mean, they're pretty bloody.
No, they're less bloody.
That's like so much blood.
So I'm sorry that, yeah, you're right. I shouldn't compare the abortionists to Hitler because the abortionists are much worse. But the fact is you could make the same arguments because Hitler, when the Nazis took power in Germany in 1933, the economy was in shambles. The Germans were starving. It was a terrible time. The Weimar Republic was a terrible time for Germany. And
he made Germany great again.
Actually socialist way. They instituted quite socialist policies to help the worker. To help the poor German.
And it included...
people had jobs and food, and it was a very pro-life, as you're going to use it that way, quote-unquote, pro-life policy. And, of course, he also, later on in his reign, started to murder Down syndrome babies and people with disabilities in the insane asylum. They pulled the gas trucks up and murdered them. Before the gassing of the Jews, that was kind of the prelude to the gassing of the Jews. But hey, you know what? You know, let's weigh how many lives were saved by his socialist policies. How many lives were enriched by Hitler giving them jobs? And you know, so 6 million Jews in the balance.
Does
that really matter? So that's the kind of calculus people are making here.
Yeah,
and it's hellish. It is a calculus from the pit of hell.
I mean, a long time ago, a couple of years ago, I went and stood outside of our local abortion clinic, which is a really ugly building. I have to drive by it twice a week, and there's a big flower on the front of it, which is really dumb. It's this low slung the ugly concrete building with a big flower, and the parking lot is horrible. It's full of craters, and you know, women, the whole idea that women, that it's a woman's choice is so malarkey, because if you go stand there for a while, yeah, women are driven there by other people, by their mothers, by their boyfriends, by their pimps. And they sit in the car for a while, usually, and then they are like, usually they, nobody goes like dancing in, you know, running. They're drugged there by people who don't want the hassle. I mean, the complicity of this culture for this crime is really expansive and big too. I bet that there's very few people whose lives haven't been touched in one way or another. And I don't, again, though, what do you do about it? Do you despair, or do you ask for mercy? You know, I think a lot of Christians have prayed over the years and begged God to make it stop, and have worked really hard. And I don't think that any of those, that kind of work is going to be lost in the balance. That God is seeing all that, and he's going to use it ultimately for his glory, even if it looks like defeat all the time in the short term. But it's not, it's not worth giving up the fight on this, or arguing about this, or bringing it constantly before the attention of people that you know in your own life.
Yeah.
So, did you get to say everything you wanted to say?
I didn't say anything I wanted to say.
You compared everyone to Hitler.
Right. That's what I wanted to do.
So, I think our work here is done. And we've been talking for a long time. So, thank you for listening. And maybe we'll be back next week.